James from SorrelPunk.com.
And this is Couch Potato Mike. How are you doing this week, bro?
Wonderful. Tired. A little under the weather this week.
Aw, what's got you all tuckered out and feeling sickly?
I don't know. I think I need to drink some pine needle tea. But yeah, I just kind of took it easy this week and didn't do a whole lot.
I know you were telling me earlier that you spent like 2 whole days watching television.
Yeah, I was like couch ridden. Oh my I was God. In your domain.
I know. It's spreading.
I hate being on that. Yeah, so I went to CrossFit one day, damn near set a PR.
Ooh, and I was on kinda, what?
Front squat.
Front squat.
Previous front squat, one rep max was 185.
Uh-huh. What did you do this time?
2 reps at 185. I dropped the bar in the third rep.
Oh.
So, I was like, there was some rage and furious anger coming forth.
You were
me.
Like, no, I must watch TV.
Yeah,
now.
I was going up and the bar dropped and I'm like, well, shit.
Damn you bars, damn you all to hell.
Yeah, so, I mean, technically now that's my 2 rep max, so, whatever.
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 Does that not count as a PR?
Well, no. I was going for a 3 rep. Well, actually... I was trying to go above and beyond it. We're trying to do heavy sets of threes with the last set, you know, being as heavy as you can. Well, I should have actually dropped the weight down a little bit because, you know, I should not have tried for a 3 rep at my maximum weight.
Oh, what is your maximum?
Well, yeah, 185.
Oh, 185.
Which now it's actually probably about 200, to be honest. Now,
if oh, I got, sweet.
If I got 2 reps at 185, I could probably do one at 200.
Well, you should definitely try that next time you're at the gym.
Next time, yeah.
Next time.
So, yeah, my big check finally came in. Yeah, more work on the tiny house will be done. Appliances will be bought.
And I'd like to pick a bone with UPS right now for leaving that in your damn hallway. Delivering a gigantic check.
$13,000.
Signature frickin' required. And he waits at his apartment all day. Nothing. Nobody ever knocks on the door. He finally checks the delivery status. It's been delivered. He's like, it has not been delivered. I've been here all day. Nobody's knocked on the door. Bjorn would have told me. So he goes out in the hall and finds the UPS package with a check for $13,000 sitting in the hallway of an apartment.
Yeah. A meth-riddled apartment at that.
Oh, my God. I've seen your neighbors.
Yeah. There's some sketchy people.
You're
there.
Lucky that damn thing was still there.
Yeah. Well, my phone beeped, and it was like, message delivered. And I was like, oh, let me go look. So I guess they, like, dropped it, ran outside, clicked the button saying it's been delivered, and ran off.
Pricks.
I almost ran down the hallway to look for the UPS and be like, you dumb fuck.
Yeah, for any of our listeners out there, if you want to help us out or back us up on this, go to UPS's website and comment on them that they're frickin' dicks.
Also, once again this year, our plans to blow up Parliament were thwarted. It did not happen.
Yes, we remembered the 5th of November, but unfortunately, our gunpowder budget ran short.
Yeah.
So, and all the flights were booked. We couldn't make it over to Parliament.
Yeah.
No.
I got family over in England.
Oh, really?
Yep.
We'll make sure they're not in Parliament next November the 5th.
Yeah.
Just got to make sure of that.
So what do we got coming up today?
Well, coming up today on the show, we're going to be talking about a Trojan horse bug that's been lurking in vital U.S. computers since apparently 2011. That's almost 4 years now.
Nice.
16 creative food storage tips. We're going to be talking about reversing autoimmune diseases with paleo. Going to be talking about Death Wish Coffee over there on our Gadget Punk segment. Over on Nutrition Punk, we're going to have 10 rules of successful exercise, along with our Permaculture Minute Wild Edible of the Week. My paleo report.
Mine.
And I would like to announce a death.
A death.
I'd like to announce a death before we jump into it. We are officially killing Mike's worst cases. We haven't had time for it the last few episodes, and it's frankly kind of getting a little bit stale, and James can only take so much punishment. He doesn't like the coat hangers.
Yeah.
So say goodbye to that. But if any of our listeners have got a good idea for maybe a replacement segment, something along those fun lines, just shoot James an email over there at james@survivalpunk.com. And before we jump back into the show, I did want to add a little bit to the banner.
I was going to say, I wish we could get enough questions in per week to replace Mike's worst cases with rapid-fire questions for James.
Rapid-fire questions for James. So start sending those survival and nutrition type and exercise type questions over, and we'll see what we can do with those. We're looking for at least 5 good questions a week that we can rapid fire off at him, see if he can get those going. But before we jump into the show, I would like to make another announcement. Yeah. For all those out there who heard last week's podcast where I announced that I now have my own website, couchpotatomike.com, we are actually, stay tuned, because we are, after this, we're going to be recording our very first episode of Couch Potato Mike Explains It All. So look out for that. That's going to be up on the site pretty soon, hopefully within the next week or so. And come on over, start listening there. Tell all your friends to start listening too. I don't care if you got to put a gun to their head to get them to start listening to you. Get people over there. Alrighty. But with that being said, enough about me. Let's talk a little bit about JM Bullion.
JM Bullion, the best place online to get your gold and silver needs to act as a monetary, as a hedge against inflation, to barter with in a possible collapse, and for cool collector value. I like collecting my silver coins.
Yeah, I've seen your collection, and they're actually pretty, I like some of them, they're pretty spiffy looking, pretty stylish.
Yeah. And right now, silver is getting super cheap at somewhere around $50 an ounce, so you, sir, need to buy...
Why is the price on silver dropping? Have you looked into that?
It's a bunch of different reasons.
You think it'll bounce back?
Yeah. Oh, I saw a gold bar earlier for $34,000.
Oh, just that much. Okay.
Yeah.
I've got that in my wallet right now.
I know.
I mean, who the hell doesn't? Especially in today's economy.
Yeah. So if you're looking to buy gold and silver at the best prices available with free shipping, head to SurroundPunk.com, click the banner in the right-hand margin for JMBullion.com, and stock up on your essential metals.
And while you're over there on that banner, why don't you go a little bit further down or up? I don't know where it's located, actually.
It's random, actually.
Random, actually. Okay, well, just look through that banner and also find the one that says Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee.
Yeah. For the high-quality coffee grown in Thailand, which surprisingly is the perfect environment to grow around the coffee beans, harvested by the local villagers that live around where the coffee beans, the trees are being grown, mm-hmm. but are paid a fair wage and not a slave labor wage that you'd expect them to be paid.
Walmart.
Yeah. So they're paid a fair wage, and then proceeds from Mai Tai Coffee go to support charity in Thailand. So you're helping kids get an education, get food in their stomach, and medical care that they wouldn't get otherwise.
And this is, yeah, like you said, it's not a gigantic corporation. These are people. These are people that are working these fields, getting paid a fair wage, and you're actually helping them out with this.
On top of that, you get great quality coffee.
I've had this coffee, and it is spectacular.
Yes.
So, that banner on the right-hand side, Mai Tai, Exotic Asian Coffee, SurvivalPunk.com. All right, and let's jump right into our first news story today. Something about Vital U.S. Computers, just, you know, they have some kind of a weird Trojan horse thing that's been lurking around for the last few years. And
so this comes from our friend M.D. Creekmore at the survivalistblog.net. Trojan horse bug lurking in Vital U.S. computers since 2011. A destructive Trojan horse malware programs have penetrated the software that runs much of the nation. Critical infrastructure is poised to cause an economic catastrophe, according to the Department of Homeland Security. National security sources told ABC News there is evidence that the malware was inserted by hackers believed to be sponsored by the Russian government and is a very serious threat. The hacked software is used to control complex industrial operations like oil and gas pipelines, power transmission grids, water distribution and filtration systems, wind turbines, and even some nuclear plants. Shutting down or damaging any of these vital public utilities would severely impact hundreds of thousands of Americans.
The Department of Homeland Security said in a bulletin that the hacking campaign has been ongoing since 2011, but no attempt has been made to activate the malware to damage, modify, or otherwise disrupt the industrial control process. So while U.S. officials recently became aware of the penetration, they don't know where or when it may be unleashed. Department of Homeland Security sources told ABC News that they think this is no random attack, and they fear that the Russians have torn a page from the old Cold War playbook and have placed the malware in key U.S. systems as a threat and/or as a deterrent to a U.S. cyber attack on Russian systems, mutually assured destruction. The hack became known to insiders last week when a DHS alert bulletin was issued by the agency Industrial Control System Cyber Emergency Response Teams to its industry members. The bulletin said the black energy penetration recently had been detected by several companies.
DHS said black energy is the same malware that was used by Russian cyber espionage group dubbed Sandworm to get NATO and some energy and telecommunication companies in Europe earlier this year. Analysis of the technical findings in the two reports show linkage in the shared command and control infrastructure between the campaigns, suggesting both are part of a broader campaign by the same threat actor. The DHS bulletin said, the hack software is very advanced. It allows designated workers to control various industrial processes through the computer, an iPad, or a smartphone, sources said. The software allows infrastructure sharing and collaborative control. This reminds me of a movie I watched a few days ago called Dragon Day. Never heard of it. I think something happened with MD Creekmore uploading this where it messed up the formatting of the article and inserted these question marks that were throwing us off in the entire article. Anyway,
but you get the gist of it. Basically, they're saying that invasive malware has been infiltrated into key system computers in the United States and has been there for at least 3, going on 4 years now. They don't know exactly where it came from or how it got there. Does that not scare the ever-loving shit out of you?
Oh, from what I've read, it's much worse. There's one case of that. I was listening to a guy from, I think, a power company, where he gets thousands of cyber attacks daily.
Daily?
Daily.
Good God. A power company, you said?
Yeah, a utility company.
Good God.
So, yeah. And this software being implanted here, that's not even that unique. Like, there's probably... It's guaranteed that that's not the only piece of software sitting on a system not activated.
Well, from the hacker's point of view, I mean, it makes sense to go after power companies, electric, especially stuff like nuclear. I mean, those are key soft spots where something going down like that could really hurt us. And I'm not just talking about power outages. You shut down a nuclear power plant incorrectly, guess what? That shuts down the cooling towers. You've got pressure building up, and eventually you're going to have nuclear fallout on U.S. soil.
Right.
And making the land for many, many miles, hundreds of miles possibly, uninhabitable. That would cause numerous and uncountable deaths at that point.
Yeah. But, I mean, just think about the deaths that it would cause if you just shut down parts of the electric grid. Turning it back on would take... Who knows how long?
And we've all seen what happens in natural disasters when hundreds of thousands of homes and businesses are without power for a few days.
Yeah.
It's mayhem. It's anarchy.
Yeah.
And not the good kind of anarchy either. I mean, this is civilization at its worst breaking down and going back to its animalistic roots for survival.
So
this is all part of that same collapse that you always hear us talking about.
Yeah. And on the flip side, I'd be more than willing to bet that we have software, the American government, hidden on Russia's computers and China's computers.
Oh, absolutely. We'd be stupid not to. I mean, everybody's bugged everybody. I actually have a unique story about this. My father was a cab driver for many years, and he used to have this one personal customer. He'd always call for him. And they were pretty good friends. This guy was a model builder. He loved to build models of famous buildings and stuff like that. Not just, you know... Interior, exterior, go full depth into it. Now, he was one time trying to build models of both the White House and the Pentagon, okay? So he actually sent away to Washington. This was in the 80s. He sent away to Washington, wrote, you know, very nice letters. I'm a model builder. My models appear in museums and stuff like that, mm-hmm. and big displays. And I would appreciate it if you could possibly send me blueprints for those buildings. You know, so I could build a detail model. They were obviously refused.
Right.
He used a last-ditch effort on this. He sent away to the Russian government. They sent him blueprints, full schematics and everything for the White House and the Pentagon, including all secret rooms. Needless to say, the Secret Service showed up at his house one day later to find out why the hell the Russian government was sending him these things. He tried to explain, you know, he's a model builder, and of course they confiscated everything. But that just shows you, this was in the 80s. This was actually after the Cold War. This was post-Cold War. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I know the Cold War ended somewhere around there, allegedly. But this was after that, and they still had so many spies in the U.S. government, just the same as the U.S. government's got spies there. We've got spies, and I imagine have infiltrated North Korea by now. I mean, Afghanistan, all this crap in the Middle East. You know, everybody's plugged into everybody else. It's kind of like the end of the world Facebook.
Yeah. So apparently, when the United States government was working on the nuclear project, the Manhattan Project, to develop nuclear weapons.
Yes, Manhattan
Project. It was classified so top secret that any knowledge about creating a nuclear bomb, either stolen or self-thought about, was illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So if you came up with a theory on how to make a nuclear bomb independently of no research in the United States government, that was treason.
Wow.
Yes. Some guy did that. He knew nothing about the Manhattan Project.
Oh, God.
But he published a paper in, like, Scientific America or something that was, like, his findings on making a nuclear weapon.
Holy shit.
And he was tried, and I think they had to dismiss his case because it was kind of ridiculous, but at the same time, they couldn't let that information out. So I think they had to, like, pull all the magazines. Like, it was a huge debacle.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so this guy, I just stumbled on nuclear weapons, and it was so close, they arrested this guy. It was a crazy story.
But that's a copy of Scientific America that you could, that has some collector's value.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, what do we got next?
Oh, you prick. All right, coming up, 16 creative food storage ideas. Now, where did we find this particular article? Let's see, 15, no, that's not, there we go.
It's at Backdoor Survival.
BackdoorSurvival.com. All right, let's see. Let's just jump right into it here. Number 16, food store. 16. Oh. Food, oh, wait. No, it goes.
You want to go to the bottom? What? Read from 16 to 1? I prefer that. I hate when people don't do that.
All right, let's just, we're starting at the back door here. If you want to read it in order, go to the site. All right, number 16, build a loft for storage in the garage. We built a storage loft in our garage. If you do not have a high-peaked ceiling like we did, you can put a shelf around the upper perimeter of the garage instead. This is a great place to store those little-used kitchen appliances, off-season clothes, and other little-used items, making room inside your home for more food.
15. Store buckets in the bathtub. I know people that never take a bath or do so only occasionally. This is not to say that they are dirty, they simply prefer the shower. Why not fill the bathtub with well-sealed buckets of food? You can put up a nice shower curtain and no one will ever be the wiser. You could also store a bucket or two in the shower. Removing it before turning the water on is not a big deal after all. By the way, the reason you want to use a bucket in the shower is that the humidity from the bathroom does not leach into your food. That plus the fact that it's easy to hoist a bucket and set it aside, so much easier than a bunch of separate packages, cans.
Number 14, fill up those empty suitcases. Unless you're a business traveler, chances are you only use your luggage once or twice a year. Empty suitcases are ideal for storing food that has been packaged in Mylar or Food Saver bags. This works equally well for pastas, rice, cereals, and other packaged items from the grocery store. Consider storing the individual packets of food in a larger garbage bag than stuffing the whole thing into a suitcase. That way you can simply remove the single large bag when you are ready to travel. Set it aside for the duration of your trip and then replace it when you get home. As a bonus, if you need to evacuate, you can grab your suitcase full of food and take it with you. Pretty neat, huh?
Number 13. Storage under the sofa or pieces of furniture.
Do not discount the shallow storage space under your sofa, chairs, or other furniture. And this is a big tip for us tiny house people. Storage everywhere. This is where I store my extra large 15-inch cast iron skillet. My 12-inch skillet calls the oven the home. Excuse me. As well as baking sheets, pizza peel, board games, and other items. Board games would be a good idea.
Absolutely.
As you walk around your own home and inventory space, be on the lookout for things that can be moved around and stored in out-of-way places, such as under the furniture.
Okay, number 12, under the bed. This one is easy, so I'm surprised more people don't consider this option. Not only that, you can use some well-placed bricks to raise your bed up and increase the height of your under-the-bed storage area. We store a lot of stuff under our bed.
I did this.
Had a whole folding table under there forever.
My bed wasn't high enough off the ground by just a tiny bit. So I had some wood blocks that I used a drill bit to sort of drill a divot into.
Mm-hmm.
And then I used Gorilla Glue to attach the bed permanently to the blocks.
Hmm.
So it was just high enough to slide under whole cases of water.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I had water stored. That was really the only thing I used for was water.
All right.
Storage behind the books on your bookshelf. If you happen to collect books, think about pulling the books out toward the edges of the shelf and storing food behind the books.
That's interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah, but a lot of people have problems with that whole out of sight, out of mind thing.
Some food lasts so long, it doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah, I'm like canned goods and shit like that. Yeah, that would be ideal.
Yeah.
Number 10, storage and decorative baskets. This is one of my favorites. I love baskets and use them to store all sorts of things in plain sight. I use one for my bread-making supplies, another for pet food and treats, another as a potato bin. These are right there in the living room, but no one is the wiser. Like I said, hidden in plain sight.
I'm nosy, and I like to look through things like this. So I would look.
You're the reason that I put marbles in the medicine cabinet.
Yes. Why is Mike taking this bottle of marbles? Did he lose his? Whap, whap, whap. Number 9, storage above the refrigerator. And there's always that useless shelf up there. Ditto the above. Mine is too high to get into on a daily basis and too deep to be practical. At the very least, the back of the area above the fridge can be used for emergency food storage.
Number 8, storage in the deep recesses of your cupboards. This is a storage area I had not thought about before. The back of the very top shelves of my cupboards are areas that I consider to be no man's land. I climbed up on a step stool to peek inside, and stored there are the cups and saucers that I never use, odds and ends of glassware, and items I have dragged from home to home during the 38 years of marriage. This stuff should be thrown out or given away. Why do I keep this stuff? Take a look inside your own cupboards. Do you have a casserole dishes you never use? How about the good china that is only used once a year, if that often? These are the candidates for the garage or garage sale. Box them up and make room for your food storage.
Shelves under the sink. As long as the food you store under the sink is well sealed, it is perfectly okay to use this space for storage. Consider a shelf just wide enough to hold a soda. Why, do I have an accent all of a sudden?
Yeah, you
soda.
Do.
Soda. Consider a shelf.
Down from Fargo there.
I know. Consider a shelf just wide enough to hold.
Hold.
Soda.
Store your garden tools under
that. Oh, my God.
or that slutty neighbor that you don't know what to do with.
This episode's going to need editing.
Oh, no, you're leaving this shit in.
Consider a shelf just wide enough to hold soda, juice, or jugs filled with rice or beans. Perfect.
I wouldn't call that perfect, but whatever. It was good enough. Yeah. Number 6, stacked canned goods or jugs of water behind the sofa. If your sofa is pushed up against a wall, consider moving it out a few inches and using this newfound space for food or water storage.
Number 5, shelves on the back of doors. I thought about doing this. As an alternative shelves, you can purchase some inexpensive over-the-door shoe organizers for storing canned foods or bottled water.
You know, my wife actually did that once. Of course, we filled them full of candy for our movie nights.
Oh.
Number four, clear out the junk on the shelf above the clothes in the closet. Talk about a waste of space. I have stored some decorative shams up on the closet shelf above my hanging clothes. I used to keep the shams on the bed, but to tell the truth, it made making the bed too much trouble, so now I pull them out when company is coming. Most certainly, these pillows can be stored in the garage where it gets really hot in the summer and really cold in the winter.
I actually use the shelf above the hanging stuff in the closet to put my folded clothes because I don't do the dresser thing. I actually use half of my closet as a rack with long-term storage food. So half of it's clothes and the other half, because I don't have that much clothes, is food on a shelf. Number three, build some shallow shelves behind the clothes in your closet. Or just use half the shell closet like I do. Most closets are far deeper than necessary for your hanging clothes. Adding a shelf just wide enough to hold canned goods will take advantage of this extra space without compromising your clothing one bit.
Number two, shelves above the washer and dryer. The area above the washer and dryer is not ideal since it is prone to heat and humidity. Still, if you were diligent about rotating on an annual basis, this area is perfectly acceptable for storing some canned goods or Mylar bags filled with rice and beans or oatmeal. In my case, I have some dead space next to the cupboard, perfect for a shelf or two.
Number one, build some shelves under the stairwell, if you don't have Harry Potter living there. If you are like me, that awkward space under the stairwell is a big mess. I actually cleaned this area out before taking the photo. That is how bad it was. If you don't want to build shelves, consider putting some buckets along the back of the wall and placing a board on top. On the top of this makeshift shelf, you can store number 10 tin cans and or packaged canned foods. This is going to be the number one makeover in my home.
And there you go. That was 16 food storage tips for the space-challenged prepper. And this, once again, comes from backdoorsurvival.com. That just sounds dirty. Sorry. All right. Let's see. Moving right along into our main topic, reversing autoimmune disease with paleo.
What really prompted me to do this episode was I was shopping at Walmart the other day.
Why? You hate that place.
I needed groceries.
Yeah, it happens.
And I ran into a friend of mine that I used to work with there,
mm-hmm.
Randy. Randy's been having some medical issues for the past couple years, you know, so I was asking him how he's doing. You know, he went over that he was talking about it and describing that he had IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, and a form of it that's close to Crohn's, which is an autoimmune disease.
Right.
Being that I've spent a lot of time researching, reading, listening to podcasts in the paleo world, autoimmune diseases come up a lot. Right. I've heard way more about, you know, autoimmune diseases, MS, Hashimoto's disease. I know a lot about these things, which is weird that I kind of went down the road of autoimmune diseases. I don't have an autoimmune disease, but it turns out that I have a lot of friends that have autoimmune diseases.
Oh, really?
And that fixer part of my brain kind of kicks in where I want to make them healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I got to talking to Randy about, you know, urging him to look up autoimmune diseases and paleo. Because there's a lot of testimonies out there of people that have IBS and IBS-like symptoms that have reversed them and completely got rid of them by eating a paleo diet. A lot of these cases you have to eat a stricter form of the paleo diet called the autoimmune protocol.
Oh, how's that differ?
Well, I think I described to you one time, just to, like, a general conversation, that, you know, there's different levels of paleo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas, like, if you don't have adverse reactions to paleo, or, you know, to some of the foods, like corn tortillas or something, like, you know, I could eat corn tortillas, not have a huge lot of issues.
Right.
So, you know, if I go out to, like, Mexican, I could eat some corn tortillas. Usually trying to go overboard because I love them, and I'll just, like, down bowl after bowl. But, you know, say that's, like, level zero, you know, where you don't follow it strict all the time. Say you do dairy like I do, like full-fat dairy, like cheeses, heavy whipping cream.
That's what I did. That was my one addition back in after the first 30 days.
you know, but I do stay away from grains as much as possible to do that. So I consider myself like level zero paleo. And then, you know, there's level one, which is strict. No grains, no dairy, no legumes, no sugar, no processed foods.
Okay.
You know, and then from there, you can go to the autoimmune protocol, which removes a few more things that can give people issues with their autoimmune diseases.
Like, what, do you know any right offhand?
The autoimmune protocol? Mm-hmm. Things that are in the nightshade family. So potatoes, tomatoes, they have compounds in them that could cause people issues. So autoimmune, it's where your body's attacking itself. And one of the big reasons for this is, well, I'm going to step back a second. So yeah, potatoes, tomatoes, those are some of the things that have to be removed. Sometimes all nuts, almonds, cashews, all of them have to be removed. Sometimes people have issues with eggs, which may or may not be the fact, may or may not be what the chickens eat that have the eggs. So a lot of store-bought chickens are fed soy. So then you're getting soy, you're getting GMO soy, there's that. You know, free-range chickens that don't ever consume any soy or anything like that, you might not have a problem with, but definitely the store-bought ones. So,
what about organic eggs? Because I see those a lot now.
I don't think you could have GMO organic yet. So that might be it, but some people might still have problems with that. So that's okay. There's actually a huge long list of things that you have to follow on the autoimmune protocol. Those are a couple of them that, you know, you really have to like step it up to the next level. Sometimes people have like digestive issues where you have to take a couple supplements or eat foods that are easier on your digestive tract. People with like IBS, obviously you're having digestive problems. So you definitely need to step it up to that next level of the autoimmune protocol. And then take gut support. So like I said earlier with the leaky gut syndrome, it's gut permeability. So your stomach literally is leaking into your bloodstream.
Good God.
And a lot of people, it's pretty common. Like, it went from not being talked about in the medical industry at all to they're like a large amount of people have this leaky gut syndrome, which, you know, like things like and I've talked about it in the past, where gluten is sort of like a sandpaper particle in your stomach that causes like, you know, it scratches and pokes holes in your stomach lining, and then the gluten particles get in your bloodstream, so your antibodies obviously see these as foreign bodies. They start attacking it. You end up with autoimmune disease because your body's attacking itself.
Right.
Which leads to, like, just a whole host of all these autoimmune diseases. Rheumatoid arthritis, people have cured that with paleo.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of in research for my friend Randy, I came across a lady that she either stopped or completely cured her husband's Alzheimer's.
Wow. That's uncurable, I thought.
It's uncurable with modern medicine. It is not so uncurable with diet.
Well, modern medicine, in my view, the vast majority of doctors, and I think we've discussed this before, they treat the symptoms, they never really treat the disease. Because if they treat the disease, they might accidentally cure the disease, and there goes their patients, goes their paycheck.
And I've seen a lot of research with paleo and a ketogenic approach to stopping, slowing down, or reversing Alzheimer's.
Wow.
Just that whole low-fat ketogenic thing again, where it's helping brain function, you know.
Which, and the big problem with that in America, we've said this before, force-fed this whole thing about fat making you fat our entire lives. Fat's bad for you, fat's bad for your heart rate, cholesterol, all that crap. And people just, and it's like the exact opposite. Once again, it's basically giving people what they want to know, what they want to hear.
Yeah. So, like I was saying, there's a long road to recovery, and taking care of that gut health is a big part of it. One of the big things in taking care of that gut health is fermented foods. real fermented sauerkraut, which is why I really want to get a sauerkraut crock to make my own sauerkraut. I've done it before in, like, plastic buckets. It's okay.
No, these are probiotics.
Yeah. Did I say anti... What did I say?
No, you didn't say anything. I'm just clarifying for our listeners that this is actually...
Yeah, so, so there's probiotics in, like, lacto-fermented goods. There's something called water kefir, which is sort of a fermented drink that... So one of the people that has got rid of their... she had... I have a friend named Danielle from Australia. She had an autoimmune disease, something with her thyroid. I don't know if it was, like, full-blown Hashimoto's, but it was, like, thyroid dysfunction that she had.
Yeah.
And after several years of tinkering, playing around paleo, doing, like, the fermented foods, the water kefir, which she's starting to sell water kefir grains. It's not real grains. They're called grains. They're, like, little particles. I actually bought some water kefir grains off of her. They're on their way from Australia.
Now, going off on a little bit of a side note here, I mean... Thyroid problems are a major problem I'm seeing in America.
Yeah, yeah. I have more and more friends talking about they have thyroid problems this and thyroid problems that, you know.
Absolutely. I used to work for this. I used to work for a pharmacy, and one of the things that – one of the most common medications, and we shipped out all over the country, one of the most common types of medications we did were thyroid medications.
Yeah.
Armour Thyroid, yep. Nature Throid, Synthroid. I mean, all these – I mean, it was the second biggest, I mean, it was the second most popular drug that I saw coming out of there.
Behind diabetes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right behind diabetes with all these thyroid medications.
Which I both consider to be dietary diseases.
I mean, and, yeah, that sort of thing, it's bread and butter to a pharmacy industry.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, did you say you have a coworker that has some sort of thyroid dysfunction?
Yes. Yeah, I actually do have a...
Have you talked to her about paleo?
I have.
I feel like a Jehovah's Witness sometimes with paleo.
Yeah, I know. It's hard not to. I mean, you see the results damn near instantly. I mean, when I went on a paleo diet, I started seeing the results that I've been searching for my whole life, like, within the first frickin' week.
Yeah.
I mean, saw a complete change in my entire energy level. The weight started dropping off and everything. But no, I have this one coworker that does have a thyroid problem. I mean, she eats so sparingly. I mean, she's a very large woman, and she eats sparingly. She doesn't eat any more than anybody else I know. And she eats relatively healthy, and bless her heart, no matter what she does, she just can't throw off the weight. I mean, she's tried everything, diet programs, tried taking medications of various types, B12 injections, you name it, she's tried it. She tried everything except the paleo diet.
Right.
And I talked to her about that, and, you know, I've actually talked to a lot of people I work with about that, because everybody's, like, impressed with my weight loss. And
which we'll definitely cover here in the next segment.
It so blows everyone's mind. What kind of diet are you on? I'm like, high fat.
Yeah.
Because I'm like paleo, I'm like, I cut out all processed foods, most dairy, all grains, legumes, stuff like that, except for green beans. And I'm on a very, they're like, well, what do you usually eat? I'm like, I eat a lot of steak, pork chops, bacon, that sort of thing. Like, oh God, what about your cholesterol? I'm like, look at me. I've lost almost 40 pounds in like a month and a half.
Yeah. Oh my. When I lost the big chunk of my weight at work, someone asked me if I had surgery.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
no, it's amazing the difference in your appearance. I mean, after you went full blown paleo.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you sort of look like a crackhead. But we got a little bit off topic there. We're talking about thyroid, your friend in Australia.
Yeah, so she, I think it was after 4 years, she's now symptom free. Symptom free. And it was a hard road. Like, she learned so much, she put so much into it, the diet was so dialed in. But it's not like that deprivation talk comes up when you describe people. Like, they just want a magic cure-all pill. It's like, there's just some things you just can't eat anymore. But it's not like Danielle suffers. Like, she's eating, you know, bacon. It's not full of sugars. Not, you know, she has to get a little bit better quality bacon than what you normally buy. You know, she's eating good quality, you know, fish and meat. She's eating fresh vegetables. She's drinking, you know, fresh water kefir. She's drinking good food, you know, drink good stuff. You know, it's, I mean, really, You eat better than you have before, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's like my wife started saying after I started this. There's people out there that would kill for the diet that you're on. I mean, because I was eating stuff like steak. I mean, steak and sweet potatoes and stuff like bacon constantly, like every day.
Yeah.
I mean, this looks like it was looking like I was eating restaurant food every day because, I mean, I'm eating all these steaks and pork chops and pork steaks and stuff like that. And, I mean, yeah, I actually, and believe it or not, the grocery bill for me has gone down because of this. Because, I mean, I find these meat deals and everything, but it's just remarkable. I honestly never thought you could eat like this and do that. I mean,
yeah, so there's no deprivation there, yeah.
No, and that's the one big thing about, that's another big thing people ask me about the paleo diet, you know, because I've told them I can't eat any, you know, all the normal stuff, processed foods and everything. Like, well, doesn't that leave you hungry? I'm like, I can eat as much food as I want.
Yeah, it's not.
I can eat literally every time I get hungry as long as I stick to paleo foods.
How's your, we need to do a paleo for dummies episode.
Yeah, we really do, but.
See, I mean, yeah.
We'll cover that more in Mike's paleo report.
Right. I urge Randy, and I'm going to follow up. I'm going to make sure he looks into it, because he was talking about, I think he was spending like $400 a month in like pills to basically to not be like vomiting and pooping everywhere.
Oh, that's horrible.
You know, just like that's feeling horrible. Sick and terrible.
That's
and
more money than most people spend on food in a month for a large family. Yeah.
The price went up, actually. If he didn't get a little help that he got, the price, I think, went up to like $1,000, and so now he's got that covered where he's not paying that anymore. But
God, insurance was the worst thing that ever happened to the pharmacy to drugs. Really was. I mean, but that's another topic altogether.
Yeah. So, and I mean, all these, it's not hard to do. It's not deprivation, you know, and it's amazing results are being seen that people just can't wrap their mind around it. And I'm just like, give it 30 days. Give it a try.
I've never seen faster results on anything else I've ever tried.
The Alzheimer's one blew me away. That I found to be amazing. Like,
I would have never thought.
There was a picture on this lady's website where, like, she had her husband draw a picture of the clock. Mm-hmm. And she had a picture of it, you know. And, like, the first clock when he was, like, way, you know, before he started treatment was, like, a Salvador Dali painting.
Mm-mm.
You know, it was, like, 1, 7, 9, 12, and it was just garbled up like he ate numbers and threw up on the page.
I mean, and a clock is a pretty basic thing to draw.
Circle,
I mean, a circle,
numbers,
couple lines,
yeah.
Numbers, yeah.
Yeah, it was not that. It was not that. 30 days after starting it, he drew a circle, he drew numbers. And then there was a picture like, I don't know, like a year or something, it was a clock. I mean,
wow. Yeah,
like within 30 days, he had like super improved mental cognitive function, and then, you know, he lived for several more years before he died, and he.
And when he died, was he? Was he dementia Alzheimer's free at that point?
I didn't read all the way about it, but he was mentally better. Like the Alzheimer
back.
Didn't progress. It didn't go any further.
Wow. I mean, and it sounded like it backtracked quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, he got back mental function.
That is the most remarkable thing I think I've heard in a long time.
I have one more story for you.
Oh,
that
good
I
God.
Think is the most impressive one I've ever heard on a paleo approach.
Well, let me pick my jaw up off the floor before you drop it again.
What I'm about to tell you, I think, will just blow you away. There's a lady, and I think her name is Melinda Walls, Dr. Melinda Walls.
That's funny. I used to know Melinda Walls. She was not a doctor.
I'll put a link to her her book in the show notes. She has a special protocol, like the Wall protocol, and something like that. And it's like it's paleo, but it's sort of more. It's a prescription. It's literally like 7 cups of vegetables a day, like 1 cup of this, 1 cup of that, 1 cup of this, 1 cup of that. You know, and like the other
very
foods,
rigid format.
Very, very rigid. Like a lot of good quality, like bone broth. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, bone stock. I think some of the organ meats that have super high vitamin contents and mineral contents. So it's a very strict sort of protocol. Like it's a protocol you follow. And she invented it because she was wheelchair ridden MS. Multiple sclerosis.
Isn't that what brought Stephen Hawking down?
I believe so. Possibly. So, you know, her symptoms get worse and worse. She's in a wheelchair. She can't walk anymore. She discovered this and cured her MS. Her protocol cured her MS.
I've never heard.
Gone.
I mean, you're talking about these diseases and syndromes that I've never heard of as being cured.
Never have a cure, yeah. Yeah. She's not in a wheelchair anymore, by the way.
That is awesome.
Yes. So one of my fellow survival friends is following her protocol because he had some health issues and I think he's doing a lot better.
And you know that program, the very strict, rigid, you know, take this. I mean, that actually sounds like a great idea, especially for people new to the paleo diet. That I mean, because one of the big things about paleo,
What do I eat?
I mean. Because, I went through that kind of confusion. I was calling you, texting you constantly.
Can I eat this? Can I eat that?
Yeah, I mean, isn't that what you named that article on the site?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Can I eat this? I mean, something like this, especially for starting out, and, you know, this would be like great training wheels.
Yeah, and I mean...
For somebody starting on the paleo diet.
Yeah, I mean, not for everybody. Everybody doesn't need this, because, I mean, like I said, it's a whole magnitude stricter than... Basic paleo.
Some people just need that.
Some people need the structure, and some people need that protocol.
I probably could have used a little bit more structure when I was starting out. I'm not going to say, I was about to use a very bad analogy. I was going to kind of say I was eating like a dog to start with, which is not meaning that I was eating the worst kind of food possible. I was just pretty much eating the same thing damn near every day because I knew it was paleo.
Well... That's a good rule I like to use. Like a lot of people usually do tend to eat about the same things every day. Every day they eat usually the same thing. I mean, we like that comfort. We like that routine.
Yeah, I mean, I'm to the point now where I'm starting to figure out variations on how to put things together differently and everything. I mean, like I started figuring out how to make some damn good paleo hashes.
Yeah.
Which I'm, you know, happy about that. But, But, you know, some people just need that structure or they just get totally lost.
So, I may actually recommend this episode to Randy.
Please do.
I probably covered most of this in, like, the hour long I was talking to him at work when I was keeping him from doing work. Whatever.
Everybody wants that occasionally.
Yeah. There's definitely some resources out there. There's some good stuff. I'll include some links in the show notes.
Randy, even though I don't know you, man, please listen to this advice. Like I said, I'm a living testament to how well this diet works. And if you've heard what we've said here, just keep that in mind. Take it to heart, man. And all my hopes and prayers are with you for the future. And I hope everything starts getting better for you.
Absolutely.
Alrighty, what do we got coming up next on the show? I didn't mean to step on your toes. Were we done with this segment?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, we're wrapping that up. We're, as usual, running long.
Okay, well, it's time for a Gadget Punk segment. We're talking about Death Wish Coffee. A coffee with skull and crossbones on it.
Have you ever drank a coffee and knew that coffee would love nothing more than to kill you?
No,
I have.
I can't say that I've ever had a death threat from a coffee before.
When I opened the coffee and I smelled it, it smelled angry and violent.
It did. You had to smell that.
Yes.
That was a coffee that wanted to stab you.
Yes. It's black. It just smelled like it.
Calm down, Al Sharpton.
It reminded me of Lamborghini. Because Lamborghini wants to kill you. It wants to see you die. If you turn the corner too fast, it will let go and throw you from it.
Mm-hmm.
Death Wish Coffee wants to kill you.
And it just encourages you to go faster and faster.
Yes. The first cup I drank of Death Wish Coffee, my head was pounding. Because it is the world's strongest coffee.
Really?
It is the most caffeinated, strongest, blackest coffee.
See, I didn't actually get to try a cup of it.
It's pure anger and violence. Your wife tried some. What did you think, Miss Producer Mike's wife?
It was really good, but it was strong. Like, you're not used to strong coffee, it really was strong.
Yeah.
What kind of effect did it have on you?
Let's just say I was not in the mood to sleep.
Yeah.
Which is usually right for me because coffee makes me sleepy.
Now, normally I like to say something like that would peel you off. You'd have to be peeled off the ceiling, but screw that. We're going for the roof here.
Yeah. I like a good, dark, strong coffee.
Yeah, with me, coffee, the stronger, the better.
Yeah.
I only drink coffee for the caffeine value, so
I love a good flavor. I love a good bitter, strong coffee, and it delivers. And like Mike's wife was saying, this is not a coffee for everybody. Hmm. Not everyone can handle coffee that does want to see them dead.
Now, this is coffee for the kind of person that needs to squeeze 6 hours of work into the next 30 minutes.
Yeah. It's... I've almost drank the bag.
Do you still have any of it?
I still have a little bit, yeah.
Okay, you got to bring that. I'll tell you probably.
I'll save you some, yeah.
Please save me some because I got to try some of this stuff.
But yeah, Death Wish Coffee. Links will be in the show notes. They have a couple other flavors they've came out with. Some good stuff. I've only tried the Death Wish brand. That's really what I wanted to.
And Death Wish Coffee, if you need a place where they're,
I don't want to have two coffee sponsors.
No, I got my own show to think about.
Oh, Mike.
Yeah.
Mike at CouchPotatoMike.com would love to get a bag.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would be more than happy to review that personally. Just send me an email, CouchPotatoMike@CouchPotatoMike.com.
You know, once you start getting some posts out, you can start hitting people up for reviews.
Oh, trust me, I will.
Yeah.
I need sponsors, folks.
If you're listening, Fleshlight, Mike could use a sponsor. Hit the pause button.
I'm trying to find the pause
button. All right, so we got some sponsors up next. If you need supplies to be bugging out or bugging in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your needs. Fish antibiotics, which is a must-need prep for any prepper out there.
It's a great place to get your bug-out bags.
Great place to get your bug-out bags. So check out CampingSurvival.com for good deals.
Go to SurvivalPunk.com and find their banner on the right-hand side.
Absolutely.
And now it is time for our Nutrition Punk segments of the show. And it looks like today we're going to be talking about 10 rules of successful exercise.
And... we are going to...
I think I misspelled exercise severely on here.
Exercise.
I think I actually wrote exercise, like getting rid of ghosts.
All right, so this is how we're going to get rid of demons today. This is not lined up in a nice 1-10 list, but we'll do this. Do the thing you love. Some fitness people like to talk tough. They say things like, pain is weakness leaving the body, or if you enjoy yourself, you're not training. I get where they're coming from because hitting the truly effective elite levels of performance does require enduring pain and sacrifice and unpleasantness and, frankly, momentary bouts of abject misery. Definitely you're more motivated to be active if you enjoy what you're doing, though. That's why I play Frisbee with Mike. That's why I go hiking with friends.
Play has always got to be a good part of physical fitness.
Yeah, I enjoy doing CrossFit, even though it does hurt and it sucks. So if you don't love what you're doing, you're not going to do it. Nobody loves sitting on the spinning machine spinning for hours a day.
I don't even know what a spinning machine does.
It's a stationary bike. It's a new fancy term.
Why do they... Whatever.
Take the next one.
Get a workout buddy or buddies. Besides the workout themselves, one big reason CrossFit has become so popular and so effective for so many people is the group dynamic it offers. You're not just toughing it out on your own anymore, and it goes beyond having a spotter. With CrossFit, you have a tribe of like-minded individuals pushing each other, shouting encouragement, suffering and succeeding together. Research confirms the benefits of this kind of camaraderie in the gym. Working out in a group boosts the stress reduction we get from exercise. Just working out in the presence of another person reduces the perceived effort of the exercise. Train with someone who's stronger, faster, fitter. If you think your workout partner is doing better than you, you will work harder. Guys might also want to work out with a lady nearby, as exercising with a member of the opposite sex has been shown to also reduce perceived exertion. I'm not sure if the same applies to women working out with men near men. I'd expect it might. You don't have to join CrossFit Box, though it's not a bad idea. Simply gathering a friend or two for regular workouts will do the trick. And hey, social contact is a nice bonus.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I like CrossFit and keep going, because there's people there and it's fun.
And one thing they didn't mention on that about working out around the opposite sex, I mean, there's just this natural instinct to try to impress somebody, so you're going to try a little bit harder.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Work out outside. Taking in a sunset, snuggled up with your sweetheart, is amazing. Going camping for a half week really recharges your body and soul, and it resets your circadian rhythm. Simply being in green space has health benefits. There's actually kids that have a disease from not being in wilderness.
Really?
It's like wilderness deficient disorder or something.
Interesting.
Anyway, yeah. But we're not meant to only passively and calmly experience the great outdoors on a regular, as close to constant basis. We should be physically engaging with them, propelling our bodies through three dimensions space at high speeds while immersed in fresh air and unfiltered sunlight. God, you know that. Every time we're outside, I'm climbing on trees and jumping and running. And
If you see a tree that's possibly climbable, you're up the damn thing anymore.
Exercising outdoor makes it more enjoyable. The more enjoyable it is, the more likely you are to do it. There are physiological benefits. According to a 2011 meta-analysis, outdoor workouts resulted in greater revitalization, increased energy, and more positive engagement with the activities, along with less depression, anger, confusion, and tension. I mean, the love of exercise in an outdoor setting even smashes the divisions between species and phyla. If a slug will do it, you have no excuses.
You know, speaking of exercising outdoors, I knew this one woman. She built up this like entire workout that she could do outside. Instead of lifting weights, she would lift logs.
Yeah.
She actually developed this whole jump roping thing with like a horse's lead rope. All of her like equipment was found stuff, and she was like doing. Unfortunately, though, she was doing all this to try to lose weight, and it's funny, she was getting thinner. But her weight was staying the same because she was accidentally building muscle instead. Oh. Well, I was so impressed by that bitch I married her.
Huh. Oh, my goodness.
She's sitting over there giggling her ass off right now. All right. Incorporate play to make workouts fun. We were just talking about this.
Yeah.
One surefire way to make exercise more enjoyable and thus more sustainable is to play. Instead of pounding out an hour on a stationary bike, go mountain biking. Instead of doing box jumps, play leapfrog with a friend or do leapfrog burpees. We need to do leapfrog. That sounds interesting.
Leapfrog burpees sound horrible.
Instead of lifting weights, lift oddly shaped objects or oddly shaped people. You were doing that earlier with my nephew.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of running aimlessly, go play sports where you can run to get places and catch balls and make baskets.
And catch frisbees.
Might I recommend Ultimate?
Oh, dude. If we could find Ultimate, you and me should go do that. Frisbee?
Ultimate Frisbee. I've often wondered what that was.
It's kind of like football with a frisbee.
Hmm. I'll have to look that up.
Passing downfield and all that good stuff. Yeah,
I'll probably look up some videos on YouTube or something. College. Or you could overhaul your entire workout program and base the whole thing on play from the ground up. If this sounds interesting, you'll want to attend a Primal Playout hosted by Daryl Edwards. The guy lives for play and has built up an impressive physique and a lot of strength and power and athleticism simply by having fun. Follow his Twitter, and if he's coming to a town near you, go see him. He's also a regular presenter on PrimalCon, so check that out, too. By framing your workouts as a fun activity, they become their own reward, and you're less likely to reward yourself with junk food afterwards. Oh, and fun is really fun.
Fun is really fun. Make your workouts meaningful and purpose-driven. A big problem that prevents people from working out is that it feels so meaningless. And let's face it, going to the gym to lift some weights so you can put them back down or walking on a treadmill for an hour without going anywhere feels pointless on some base level. It isn't always this way, though. Humans used to perform physical demanding tasks on a regular basis in order to live, eat, and thrive. It wasn't exercise or a workout, but it made us fit, strong, and fast just the same.
Before you continue, that just reminded me of something. I used to work in this mall at the... on the second floor, at this business on the second floor, right next door was a gym. And I would watch people all day ride the escalators up to the gym and get on stair-stepping machines.
It just reminded me of that. I'm sorry. I had to share that. Just the complete irony of it.
It's terrible.
When they really could have just saved their money by continuously walking up the opposite escalator.
Yeah.
Of course, that pisses people off. But anyway, go ahead.
Most of us can't create a life where regular exercise is a prerequisite for survival. Well, maybe I can. Nor would we want to. Do we really? But we can inject meaning and purpose into our movement. Simple things like working with your hands and building useful things, helping friends move, cleaning up a park or nature area, commuting to work on bike or on foot, going up the escalator the wrong way, or doing physical labor can give you a great workout and produce tangible and useful results.
Find flow. Have you ever had a workout that feels effortless until it's over, at which point you collapse under the weight of suddenly realized exertion? That's flow. When he scored 13 points in a 33 seconds, Tracy McGrady was deep in the flow state, or the zone. Software developers seek flow to improve their coding. Meditation is stationary flow. That guy wearing shades in the gym, flexing for the mirror in between sets on the pec deck, he's probably not experiencing flow. How do you do it? According to the father of flow research, Dr. Mihaly, something weird and hard to pronounce.
Wow.
We must engage in doable but difficult challenges that tap into the individual curiosities and interests while giving immediate feedback. Luckily, an engaging workout tends to promote the flow state fairly easily as long as you're looking for it. Try eliminating distractions that pull your attention from the task. Instead of running on that flat track, for example, go running on a trail that forces you to dodge rocks, jump roots, and pay close attention to where your feet go. The time will fly by and you'll probably go longer than you would have on the track. Jogging with a podcast in your headphones can be nice, but it's important to lose yourself in the task at hand sometimes. You can always flex in the mirror after your workout.
I've had some good trail runs where you're running. You know that park I went to with you and your family? You had the asthma attack. I went trail running in
you
there.
You always
got to
bring up the asthma attack. I knew what park you were talking about.
Yeah. You're running in there, and there's rocks everywhere, and there's like dangerous ledges, and like the dirt's falling off, and there's roots in your way. So like running through that, and like jumping and dodging and moving,
almost feels like a mission at that point.
Yeah, you're trying to keep from breaking your ankle or falling down a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you definitely get in the flow that way. Savor how exercise makes you feel. Exercise is psychedelic. Yes. It expands and alters consciousness. It's an escape from the drudgery of real life, bills, deadlines, stress, and neurotic thought loops. Oh my God, it's so true.
Don't even get me started.
It's a narcotic, literally causing your brain to produce androgynous opiates and cannabinoids that get you high. You should come work out with me in CrossFit. Good workouts reveal the extremes of subjective human experience. We get butterflies before a big lift or a particularly grueling sprint and feel the real anxiety of knowing you're able to push your body to its limit. We know the joy of victory, even if it's against your last workout self, and the crushing dejection of defeat, like my failed 3-rep max attempt. The ups, the downs, the all-arounds. Good workout relaxes you. All is right with the world after a heavy lifting section, or a hike in the backcountry. Food tastes better, the sunset sets prettier, work stress is somehow less pressing. You're confident after a workout? Yeah, I just lifted that. You feel sexier too because you've proven to yourself and the world that you know how to use and inhabit your body.
Release your attachment to the outcome. As a high-level endurance athlete, I was obsessed with the outcome. During events, I'd strap the outcome onto my chest like a baby carrier and would it help me reach the finish line. And when I'd languish in bed trying to avoid the day's training, it was outcome tugging at the sheets that was bringing me a cup of coffee. I didn't have the outcome, the finish line. I couldn't have faced all the grueling torture required of elite endurance athletes. But that's no way to live. Detaching myself from the outcome and focusing on the journey to whatever it is I'm to wherever it is I'm going has proven to be a game changer for my health, my happiness, and my ultimate fitness. When you can immerse yourself in the journey and the exercise itself as you're doing it, great stuff happens. You hit the flow state more easily. You find yourself having fun again when you work out. You discover that training can be an end in itself, and your workouts are reinvigorating and more fruitful. Keep your goals, of course. Just don't forget to savor the journey and don't let yourself fall to pieces in despair if the outcome differs from your expectations.
Decide if you're training or just exercising. Which is it, training or exercising? Are you interested in being active, moving your body, getting generally fitter and stronger, staying fit, staying strong without adhering to any specific performance goals? Then you are exercising. You have goals, they are just more diffuse, like getting healthier, like get healthier. Or maybe you have specific performance goals, like deadlift 500 pounds.
Can you do that yet?
I can deadlift 285.
And that's a no.
That is a no.
Or compete.
I could deadlift you.
I would like to see you. No, I wouldn't like to see you drop me in the field, you son of a bitch, and that was just a piggyback ride. Yeah. And then you had to drop me twice, because the first time we didn't get it on camera. Thanks, honey.
You weigh less now, though. Like deadlift 500 pounds or compete in Masters Marathons and actually compete. Then you'd probably be going to training, which means a specific training program consisting of progression, regimentation, and maybe periodization. Training is stricter. They're both great, depending on your goals, but exercising when you should be training or training when all you really need to do is exercising can make you miserable and render your workouts ineffective and meandering.
It's like working out and drinking a 40 and eating some Teddy Grahams.
Yeah, it's pointless.
And try something new. Humans are novelty seekers. It's kind of what drove us to walk the entire globe, explore new surroundings, test our limits, and become the apex predators on the planet. That hardwiring affects our relationships with everything. The media we consume, the games we play, the hobbies we spend time on, the relationships we forge, and the exercises we do. One way trying a new workout or exercise can help is by boosting enthusiasm. If you're bored with your workout, you're bored. You're going through the motions, you're doing the minimum, and getting minimal results. If you're excited about what you're doing in the gym, on the track, or on the trail, you'll be more into it and you'll get more out of it. Novelty seekers often feel bad about their desire for something new. They shouldn't. They should indulge it, especially when it comes to movement. And when it comes to strength training, it might even be more effective to change up the exercises you do than simply increase the intensity, weight, volume, etc. In a recent study, researchers tested the effects of exercise variations in both beginning strength trainees and early advanced trainees. Compared to varying the intensity, varying the exercises yielded significant strength and hypertrophy gains in both groups. In the words of the lead researcher, changing up the exercises you do in the gym seems to produce a more complete muscle activation, hypertrophying of all the heads of the multi-pinnate muscles. As I said earlier, you don't have to do everything on this list, but it wouldn't hurt.
Good stuff from MarksDailyApple.com. So, Mark Sisson's website. I love this website. This is good stuff. And
all right.
I love Mark.
Alrighty, now it's he loves you, Mark. All right, and now it is time.
I'd love to get Mark on the show one day.
We should do that. We should try to invite him onto the show. All right, now it is time for
Permaculture Minute.
Our Permaculture Minute. Let me see. I always start on the wrong side of the deck.
I think I'm gonna buy a couple of those decks to give out for Christmas.
Yeah, you should. All right, and this time we're going to be discussing the Queen of Spades, Black Locust. Have I already done this one?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Known as the fence post tree, black locust fence posts are known for being in the ground for over 70 years without rotting. Leaves make great sheep and goat forage. Consider one of the best woods for tool handles. Has a high BTU per cord of firewood and burns really hot. Bees make the blossom nectar into some of the highest quality honey, possibly the best wood for building things that will be exposed to the elements. A great polyculture tree, it fixes nitrogen that it shares with surrounding plants. The leaves open in late spring, allowing the soil to warm, and then provide a dappled shade. And that has been our Permaculture Minute. Thanks again to Paul Wheaton for making this very handy deck of cards that we enjoy so much reading on the show each week. And now we're going to move right into our Wild Edible of the Week. And I have pre-selected a Wild Edible for the week. Let me just find it again. Our Wild Edible this week is Wapato, a.k.a. Arrowhead, Sagittaria SPP.
Is that a mushroom? Fungi?
Let's see. They're tubers.
Oh, nice.
The elusive tubers, the broadleaf, that shows a picture of them. Wapato or arrowhead is a plant that many wild food enthusiasts have heard, but few have tried. Things that grow hidden deep in the muck do not catch one's eye. The literary accounts of the native women walking chest-deep in frigid water to harvest these tubers have done little to entice people into the marshes and search for them. Furthermore, most accounts of the use of Wapato provide an insufficient description of the process. Thus, one of North America's most exciting wild foods has been kept largely a secret. Let's see here. Arrowhead or Wapato is an emergent aquatic plant of the family Alcyonema, and it's not the same thing as arrowroot available commercially. North America is home to numerous species of the genus Sagittaria, most of which produce edible tubers. However, some kinds are definitely more worth your time than others. So the species that is most commonly harvested in the broad-leaved arrowhead, S. latifolia, which is the largest species that I am familiar with. S. conidia is another common species, smaller than the former, its tubers being smaller and more difficult to gather. Another common Wapato of the northern U.S. and Canada is the S. rigida, which can grow quite large but always has small tubers. There may be other excellent species of Wapato in other areas of the country. All Wapato species have long-stalked basal leaves. These range greatly in shape, but the classic form is pointed at the tip with two long, pointed lobes projecting in the opposite directions. This leaf, in botanical terms called the sagittatae, accounts for the name arrowhead. The sagittate leaves vary from 3 inches, 8 centimeters, to more than 3 feet, 1 meter in length, and they can be ribbon-like and only a half an inch wide, or they may be robust and as much as 1.5 feet wide. Immense variation in form can exist among plants growing only a few feet apart. Wapato also varies enormously in size from a bunch of stuff. And I don't think this is the... Difficult species of Wapatos are found across North America wherever there are wetlands, except that they are absent from the far north. Wapato is also widespread in Europe and Asia. Let's see. Wapato can be harvested beginning in late summer, but most of the tubers will not be fully grown until the plants begin to turn brown and die. I prefer to harvest mine in late September and early October when the tubers have attained their full size, but the water is not yet exceedingly cold. If you want to read more about a Wapato or arrowhead, pick up a copy of The Forager's Harvest, A Guide to Identifying, Harvesting, and Preparing Edible Wild Plants by Samuel Thayer, which is where I'm reading this from. And that has been our Wild Edible for the week. I would have read the whole thing, but it was several pages long.
I was getting ready to be like, oh, we should wrap it up.
Yeah, until you saw me start skimming through it. And now it is time, once again, for Mike's Paleo Report.
Oh,
I'm sorry that this bores you, USOV.
So you covered a lot of stuff today in our autoimmune thing, which was nice to hear your perspective on a fairly recent paleo convert.
Oh, absolutely.
So what do you have to check in on this week?
Well, things have pretty been good, much going business as usual. I have noticed one thing that I've had a decrease in hunger lately, and I don't think that is actually caused from the diet. I think it's just basically been from all the personal stress I've been under.
Right.
I always suffer from a loss of appetite for that, and I probably did a couple of no-nos this week. I actually skipped breakfast a couple of mornings just because I wasn't hungry. And I didn't feel hungry until well later that afternoon and had to force myself to eat. I ate lunch at lunchtime because it was lunchtime, not because I was hungry.
Well, you know, and that's a big myth that Jimmy Moore likes to go off about.
What's that?
If you're not hungry, don't eat.
He actually did say that in the interview, now that you've refreshed my memory.
Yeah, I mean, people are sort of conditioned to think, oh, it's breakfast, I gotta eat. And myself, I've sort of done that before, where it's like I knew I had to eat then, because I knew it would be hours before I could have a chance to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be stuck being hungry somewhere where I couldn't eat good food. But usually if I can help it, if I'm not hungry, I won't eat then.
Yeah, I mean, that's some mornings I wake up starving.
Yeah.
Just like 2-3 mornings this week, because my appetite's been so low, I mean, I just wasn't hungry. And like I said, even when I got around to lunchtime, I still wasn't hungry. Yeah. I made myself eat because it was lunchtime.
Yeah.
And honestly, dude, one can of Spam, and I'll be honest, it's not even name brand Spam. It's exact same stuff.
Yeah.
One can of Spam, I brought this can of Spam with me for lunch on Monday. I finished it on Wednesday. Because my appetite's been so low.
Yeah. And he just left it in his glove box for like 2 days.
Well, you know, that's when it just, you know, when it gets all sticky and slimy and smelling like it's rotten, that's when it's getting good.
Yeah, slimy yet satisfying.
No, but I actually haven't done my weigh-in yet. I was actually going to do that live on the air, so if you don't mind, I'm going to step into the bathroom. She did put the scale back in the bathroom, didn't she, hon?
And?
I've gained 3 pounds this week.
That happens.
I mean, I'm at 263.
And you're at 260 previously,
260
right?
Last week, so I'm a little bit sad.
Oh, well, you're good. You're still in the right. You're still in the right direction.
Yeah, but how did I gain 3 pounds in a week?
It fluctuates.
Ah.
I mean, I saw a TV show where they weighed someone before and after taking a poop, and it was like 2 pounds. So just drop a load.
I haven't pooped today, so that might be my problem.
There you go.
Actually, I don't think I pooped yesterday either.
Oh, that's probably not a good thing.
Yeah.
You didn't poop in 2 days?
Dude, I only usually poop like 3 times a week.
Oh. We should look into your digestive tract.
Well, you know, it's actually relatively... What the hell? Where's the rest of my... Never mind. It's actually interesting. Like, only one out of four women actually go to the bathroom every day, and it's pretty much the same for men.
I had an ex-girlfriend that struggled to, like, use the bathroom for number two, like, weekly.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm like, I can't imagine going more than 2 days without doing number two.
Well, last year I was working with a woman, and somewhere around January, I heard her asking a pharmacist for help. She's basically like, is there anything you can you give me? I have not done a number two since before Thanksgiving. This was January. This was 2 months later. She had not pooed.
I think the problem is a lot of women are like so anti-fat. They're so low fat. They watch fat and everything.
Oh, this woman was a beanpole.
Well, yeah, but I mean like dietary fat.
Mm-hmm.
There's times like when I was doing like the 90% fat experience.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was going regularly, sir.
All right.
Well, that'll be an episode for another time. Maybe the Survival Punk's last episode, the poo episode.
Yeah, this has been Mike's Poolio Report.
Yeah, let's move along. We're running long.
Oh,
go figure.
All right, and
we're at an hour and 20.
If you're looking for a better diet that doesn't cause the stuff we've been talking about, you might want to visit the good folks over at Well Food Co.
Yes, run by John Wellborn and his wife, with food help developed from Rob Wolf. They have things like the Paleo MRE, the Carne Bars, which are amazing, the Paleo Cookies. So, with holidays coming up, it's good to try some of these better options for your Paleo food snacks. They have a Peppermint Chocolate Bar.
Peppermint Chocolate?
Yes.
I've never heard of those two things together.
And it's Paleo, so it's like milk, it's like dairy-free, soy-free, so good.
Find their little spot in the banner over there, the right hand side of survivalpunk.com.
And just a passing note, if you happen to be a Survival Punk Army member, I believe you get 20% off at Well Food Co.
That is awesome.
20% off.
Another great reason to join the Survival Punk Army. And speaking of armies, you know what armies use a lot of? Ammunition.
Ammunition. And you should be buying your ammunition from freemunitions.com, where they are the largest direct-to-consumer retailer of remanufactured ammunition. So they reload ammunition. They do everything in-house with components that they get here.
Now, what does that mean to reload ammunition?
They take shot casings.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the casings that are out in your yard that we shot those pumpkins at earlier.
Yeah, we blasted the hell out of some pumpkins.
Yeah. They would add a new primer to it. to the bottom so that the firing pin would make it shoot. They refill it with black powder, so gunpowder, and then they put a new bullet into the casing.
Oh, okay.
And then cramp it, so they refill it, and they make it work again. Which, with a lot of rifles, if you reload the ammunition, the shell, after being shot, it expands to fill the inside of your chamber, so now you have a perfect match for your weapon.
Awesome.
So it shoots more accurate. So, freedommunitions.com.
Survivalpunk.com, banner on the right-hand side.
Yep.
Alrighty, and if you would like to make your way onto that banner on the right-hand side of survivalpunk.com, please contact James at survivalpunk.com. That's his email address.
Yep, and then we can work something else out and then see where we're going.
Yep, make you some great deals. He takes cash, he takes precious metal, meat, barter, whatever you got. Throw it at James. You can work out great deals. James at survivalpunk.com. Now it is time for Mike's Celebrity Invite of the Week. And this week, I just punched myself in the balls. This week, I am inviting a Mr. David Nash onto the show. David Nash is, you've heard of Dual Homestead? He's the other half of Dual Homestead.
Exactly.
He is your benefactor, sir.
Yes, he is a... he has been on Doomsday Preppers, for those of you that like that show.
Wow, he's actually been on that?
Yeah, he was on episode of Doomsday Preppers.
Yep, wow. What do you think of it?
Huh?
Never mind. David Nash.
I've watched that episode. I made myself watch all of it.
You know this guy. Make him listen to this invite, damn it.
He's been dying to get on the show. It's so... Survival Punk is such a hard, exclusive thing to get on. I mean...
I know. We've got him lined up waiting out the frickin' door. I mean, hell, I invited Robert Irvine last week. He won't stop calling me now.
I know.
And he's on a 6-month waiting list.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway... David Nash, you have an open-ended, open-door invite onto the Survival Punk podcast. All righty, and we were speaking about the Survival Punk Army earlier, and people think, is the Survival Punk Army for me? They don't really want me. Well, let me tell you something. The Survival Punk Army wants you!
Yes, and the discount code MOVING, all lowercase letters, will end today. So hop on the bandwagon and get your membership.
You still have a time to get a year's membership for $30.
Yes.
And you, I mean, the savings that go along with it are worth that. You'll save more than that.
Exactly.
You will make your money back just by shopping at one of the 12 vendors. How
12
many?
12 vendors, free ebooks.
Right, you get discounts at these vendors anywhere from 10 to 20%. I mean, you're getting free ebooks. You're getting our podcast in 10 episode zip files. You are going to have access to exclusive content like the eventual podcast we're going to record on our trip down to Rock City, as well as other things. And if you join the Survival Punk Army, I will even give you a discount onto Mike's Couch Potato Legionnaires whenever I make that happen. Yes.
Couch Potato Legionnaires.
The Couch Potato Legionnaires. Mike's Couch Potato Legionnaires. If you join the Survival Punk Army. Just remember, find the site. Find the thousands of places the link is on that site. Click it. Join up, because the Survival Punk Army wants you! I think this has been a pretty good show so far.
Yep. Much better than last episode, which I profusely apologize for, because I just didn't feel that I brought my A game last time.
Oh, your A game got turned on eventually.
Well, it kind of came and went. When I started ranting about politics, people definitely got to hear how I feel.
One of our dedicated listeners actually sent you a comment. Telling you that you should never hold back on your feelings.
Yeah.
Do what you did, because holding back is not very punk.
It is not. And that's one of the things I told you that Mike has gotten onto me because I've quoted before, fuck the listeners. I don't mean fuck you guys. I mean, I'm not going to compromise my integrity for anybody. You either like me or you don't. Most of you, if you've been listening, especially since you that have been listening since the first episodes.
Yeah, he's not saying fuck you guys.
I'm just saying, this is me, deal with it.
If you're one of these, like, extreme right-wing or left-wing guys that gets on there and nitpicks just looking for some shit to bitch about, fuck you guys. I mean, seriously. I mean, we don't need you. Just listen to another podcast or just, you know, change the channel, whatever, just turn off your damn iPod. Besides, if you're that kind of curmudgeon, why would you even be having an iPod? That's fun. You don't need fun. You need something that's going to, you know, irritate you. That way you got something to gripe about.
And more importantly, if you're a grammar Nazi, fuck you. Don't ever tell me my grammar's wrong when you've never published anything in your life.
Damn straight. I don't care. I will end a sentence in a fucking preposition. Thank you very much. I will misspell whatever. I wrote exercise on our own damn pod board today.
Yeah. And with that, let's wrap this mother up.
All right.
So we can record Couch Potato Mike's premiere poodcast.
It's not going to be a poodcast.
Poodcast.
This was a poodcast.
Yeah.
The number two rated show. All righty. So for God, I can't even talk right now. So for the Survival Punk Podcast, this is Mike.
And this is James.
And remember, try not, do or do not. There is no try.
DIY to survive.